Good morning and welcome to episode 29 of Taking the Charge podcast from still kind of cold Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News, and with me, as always...
Hi, this is Oz Davis from Ballin Europe, based in Budapest, Hungary, a happy tiny little island of Laker Nation, where all is well. We're recording this just... hours after a nice 20-point win by the Lakers over the Mavericks. And, you know, watching Kobe and Powell out there these days, you know, you kind of think, wow, that's a pretty good 1-2 tandem. That tandem could win a championship.
Yeah. Hasn't won a chip in chip already, no?
Yeah. Interesting that, huh?
Yeah.
It finally looks like they remember those days out there.
Well... yeah, if they make it.
Yeah, if they make the playoffs. I was gonna say about the Laker Nation that it is the nation of diminished expectations this season. That's for sure. I mean, I'm really surprised that we're talking about Utah at this point in the season still, but they will make it, Dave. They will make it, and they'll go 7 games with San Antonio.
7, huh? Ooh.
Well, and when I say 7, I mean more like 4 or 5.
Yeah, exactly. Lakers once again start the show.
It all comes back to the Lakers.
It all comes back to the Lakers.
At least in Oz Davis's world, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think we have a good show. Lots of good stuff to talk about. We're gonna obviously touch a little bit on the Final Four of the NCAA. It's the last game day of the EuroLeague season. EuroLeague Top 16. Also get a little chat with Michael Bramos from the Panathinaikos. And then I think this will be our first remake as Movie of the Week. Is that right?
It's got to be.
I think so.
Well, no, because we did Throw Mama from the Train.
Yeah, that's not
exactly a remake, but definitely an inspired by film.
Yeah. Okay. We were talking about Rollerball again. But we'll touch on that later on in the show. First of all, let's get the housekeeping out of the way. You can catch me at hinnews.com, obviously, and then there's the Twitter thing. I am at hinnews is my handle. And then there's the Facebook group, Taking the Charge. Just put that in and we'll get you in there. And you can reach me on email at hinnews@gmx.de.
Well, as for my sake, the website is ballineurope.com. The Facebook page is ballineurope.com. Just do a search for that. The Twitter feed is BIE_basketball. The email address is ballineurope@yahoo.com. And I would also advise listeners who don't already follow sportandu.net, which everybody does, have a look out on Mondays, now introducing the Ball in Europe, let's call it, / Sportando European Team of the Week.
Yeah, I wanted to also congratulate you on that. Oz takes a look at the a pretty time-consuming look, I think. picks a top 5 players of the week.
Top 5 plus 6 man plus second team, Dave. We get a whole dirty dozen every week with lots of video embeds.
Yeah, lots of video. I'm sure they're happy about that as well, to have all the links up there. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's good to get the guys from Iceland some publicity. Mainly. I'm just glad to be able to bring this concept to basketball. You see it often in football, soccer, especially in Britain. But I've seen recently that ESPN has picked up this trend and does it for major leagues around the world as well, team of the week. But I've never really seen it in basketball. We have, of course, EuroLeague awards, all EuroLeague team at every level and such like this, but not on a week-to-week basis. And it's also a nice opportunity to get some guys playing in countries like Iceland and Finland some publicity. One of the kicks of the team of the week is that more or less all levels are considered equal. I mean, I think that a 30-point, 9-rebound, 8-assist performance in Slovakia is still pretty damn impressive. I mean, it's like they always say about these records. Take for example Chamberlain's 100 points. Okay, it doesn't matter who you're playing. 100 points is pretty impressive. Say the same with stuff like the Miami Heat win streak. I mean, it doesn't matter who you're playing. 27 wins in a row is pretty decent. So I like the opportunity to give a shout out to the more obscure players in the more obscure leagues around Europe as well on a pretty popular forum, sportandu.net. So hopefully people pay attention to this column and these guys and these clips. Love the video embeds. Gotta love the embeds.
What would you say is the biggest criteria that you take into? Because I know we talked off the air, sort of that, a lot of times you look at guys that have two games, and that definitely is a help during the week. But what would you say is the main criteria, other than the basically having a good game?
Wow. Okay. Well, this is the filtering process. The reason why this format is so adaptable to soccer football is because most players play one game a week. Even if your team is competing in Champions League, say, you might not play in the domestic league that week. And so mostly it's about, especially with British teams of the week, every team plays one game on the weekend usually, and that's it. And so it's very easy to form a team of the week. Now in Europe there are staggered schedules. You have teams playing in two, three leagues at once, with VTB and Euro Cup and things like this factored in. So one of the main criteria is, yeah, you should play more than one game. I did make an exception this week for Nathan Jaoui, who only played one game, but as is noted in the column, I mean, wow, what a game! I mean, after a very shaky first 2 minutes, he completely took over for FC Barcelona. But I don't want to go on a tangent because I'll probably talk about Barcelona later in the show. However, that is a consideration. To some extent, level of play will be a tiebreaker. I think it's more important to have a good performance in a playoff game or a cup game or a must-win game in EuroLeague, say, to advance to the next level. I think that, to step up under pressure, which is what we always like to see from individuals in basketball, I think this is a tiebreaker. This is a make or break to getting on the Sportando European Team of the Week. After that, gee, it helps if your team wins. I'll give you bonus points for that. You should string together at least two good games. It's going to be pretty tough to make the team of the week if you have one great game and one 3 of 7 for 8 point game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The filtering process goes on through the week, we will say. And there are many factors that come into play. But again, two solid performances will get you on Team of the Week. And it's amazing how infrequently this happens. Again, perhaps your guys aren't seeing as much time in the EuroLeague game as you do in the domestic league or vice versa. It's actually quite difficult for to put together a consecutive double-double, for example. And so there are I think that if you give 12 spots on a team of the week, that those will be pretty much the top 12 performances of the week through Europe. The nice consistent weeks in Europe, I think.
And you say through Europe, but obviously you have a couple of NBA guys. Europeans in the NBA as well are included
Yes,
then?
yeah. We have to consider them if only for the great clip possibilities. But I mean, when a after a week like somebody like Dirk had last week, threw up a couple of 30-point games, including his best two scoring performances of the season. When you talk about Ricky almost getting a triple-double, I mean, how can you resist? putting this guy on the team. But the high profile players deserve the credit as well. And again, I'm hoping that, let's say you're, for example, a Ricky Rubio fanatic, you're a member of the Church of Saint Ricky. You check out the column to get anything you can on your player, and maybe you notice our man from France or our man from Iceland out there on the team as well, and check out their clips, and look them up on Wikipedia and Google them, and such as we do in the 21st century.
Okay, what about college? You gonna be watching them as well? Europeans over there?
I'm torn about stuff like college and Division Twos, second divisions, I should say, and D League and stuff like this. Luckily, I can pretty much avoid that for the rest of this season, but this is something that we'll have to consider as European Team of the Week evolves.
Segueing there to the to college, there are no Europeans in the Final Four, in the NCAA Final Four. There were a couple of guys on the fringe in the top in the regional finals, but none of them actually made it to the final to the Final Four. We talked last week about our brackets being more.
Shattered.
Obviously, the Final Four, we have Wichita State, the Shockers, taking on Louisville, the only remaining top seed, one number one seed left, and then the second semifinal will be Michigan against Syracuse. You want to go out and make picks? Your thoughts on those? Or you
Go
want to talk
Wichita.
about the game?
Go Wichita State, I think. I mean, that's my thought. With so much going on in the other leagues, I gotta say this one has been on the back burner for me. I mean, I literally watched, I think, 12 games this week in full, and none of them were the college games. I'm just sad about developments in UNM and how we did in the tournament, and we're bounced, and Gonzaga was bounced, and now there's no more Europeans, and Gulf Coast Florida disappeared, and their coach left, and oh my God. It's like March Madness gets like, it turns to March depression, I think, at some point for all but the championship team. Or maybe Wichita State. Okay, Wichita State will not go home unhappy. I mean, I don't think anybody on the planet had them picked in the Final Four. But besides that, March Madness can be extremely disappointing, can't it?
Well, yeah, sure, of course. They've definitely lived up to their nicknames, their official the team name, the Shockers,
Yes.
going,
Big name.
getting past Gonzaga, the 9 seed getting past Gonzaga, and then Ohio State to reach the Final Four, and would be the lowest seed to win the title. Obviously, there was Villanova.
No, Nova was in at 10,
Was
I
it?
believe.
No, Villanova was an 8 seed.
They were 8. Okay.
Villanova was an 8 seed in 85 when they beat when
Georgetown.
Kevin Pinckney beat Georgetown. Louisville.
Wow. Nice reference to Pickney. Very well done. Very well.
I got more where that's coming. Louisville, obviously, man, that was brutal. That injury to Kevin Ware. I saw yesterday or to this morning that he left the hospital. That was just nasty. You know, there's, you know, those double compound leg fractures where you see the leg going in, you know, very unnatural directions is just really disturbing.
Yeah, but it's funny how everybody says it was disturbing, but nobody could look away. I still have not seen it.
You haven't seen it yet? Oh.
No. I saw the Enes Kanter shoulder separation, and that was enough to turn my stomach.
If you do watch it, the reaction of the bench is pretty you know, because it happens right in front of the Louisville bench, and the guys just you know, just turn away. It's pretty horrible. And obviously that, you know, they'll be riding a high besides being a great team. You know, they'll be riding a high, also an emotional high, trying to get the title for him. You know, Louisville, you know, they haven't won since 86, the year after Villanova. And you know who the star was in 86, right? I guess not. Never nervous. Purvis Ellison, man.
Oh, that's right.
And you looked back, and I remember that Duke team was really good. And then I looked back. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you remember Danny Ferry and Johnny Dawkins. But I mean, you know, they had Tommy Amaker, who was, you know, who's been a very successful college coach. A lot of people will know Jay Billis was on that team, and also Mark Allery, who was actually on the All Tournament team. So it would be the first title since their second title in general, and the first since '86. So a long time.
It's a shame they have to go through Wichita State to do it, though. They should reseed.
Right.
They should vote.
Just draw.
Yeah, redraw. I mean, the two best stories in the tournament. All of a sudden, the two best stories in the tournament have to play each other on the way out. So,
yeah,
that's unfortunate. See, that's what I'm saying. It's all March manic depression.
Ah, oh, come on. It's going to be a good one. Michigan, Syracuse is going to be fun. Syracuse and their defense is just going to be it's going to be interesting to see what Michigan can do with Trey Burke and the kids you know, there's Glenn Robinson's kid and then also Tim Hardaway's kid. That's going to be a battle, and then really two more teams that haven't won in a while. Syracuse won in 03 with Carmelo Anthony. Michigan, their last title, 89. You know, their last Final Four was 92-93 with the Fab Five. So, you know, these are some very storied schools, but really, if you look back, they really haven't won anything in a while. I mean, okay, Syracuse, you know, you think 2003, but that's 10 years ago already. So,
how crazy is this Michigan Syracuse game going to be? I mean, this is completely unstoppable force versus immovable object.
Yep.
Michigan is scoring. I mean, these numbers are ridiculous. Michigan scores 71, 78, 87, and 79. Okay. Meanwhile, on the other side, you've got Syracuse. Let's see. They're giving up. Oh, let me look at my bracket. They're giving up 34, 60, 50 against Indiana, and 39
against Marquette in the regional final.
What is going to? I mean, this could solve that ages-old philosophical question. I mean, this is completely immovable force versus unstoppable object. Right there, you go. There's a good conundrum for you. Wow, should be an interesting one.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm really looking forward to both of these games.
I will tune in for that, for sure.
You're gonna watch Wichita State too?
Let's see. That one would start at just about midnight.
Okay, good. I was going to ask you what time those games start. I didn't look.
Yeah, according to the ESPN bracket, and I assume this is EST, they've got Louisville taking on Wichita State at 6:09. EST, so that would be right after
that's midnight. Okay, and then probably at
and then the other one is 8:49, so let's say 3 in the morning,
3 o'clock in the morning.
See, now that I could make, but it's just a question of do I stay up until midnight or do I turn into a pumpkin and watch that Louisville Wichita game?
Is there a Lakers game going on as well? What is that? That's Saturday, right?
Yeah, I got some time.
There's nothing. There's no game. There's no Lakers game.
Yeah, the NBA tends to respect the Final Four of the NCAA, and they try not to schedule games. They have in the past completely gone game free on the championship night. Now let's see. Today is Thursday, so the championship is on Sunday night.
No, championship's Monday night.
Yes, Monday night. So I don't know. The NBA, are they going schedule free on Monday night?
I'm looking right now. So
They might.
give me your picks, man.
Oh God, do I have to?
Come
Okay,
on. Come on.
all right. I'm gonna go Michigan. I'm gonna go Michigan on the one side. Let's say they stay hot. You know,
Okay.
Michigan on the one side, and then, jeez, I mean, good guy versus good guy. Okay, well, I'll just take the conservative pick. I'll say Louisville. Louisville, Michigan.
Louisville, Michigan. I definitely have Michigan, and I'm kind of torn with Louisville as well.
Course.
Their last loss was that five overtime game against Notre Dame. They haven't lost since then. So they haven't lost since then.
Wow. Good
But
point.
yeah, I don't know, man. I remember the main thing that I didn't like about Gonzaga was that they haven't played any teams that played. Tight games and stuff like that, and but obviously Louisville have been in games in tight games and stuff. I just think that Louisville, if you add the emotional high, the emotional factor with the injury to Kevin Ware,
No,
I
that's
think
the thing.
that's going to be enough. I think that's really going to be the last thing. If that wasn't the case, I think I would give maybe Wichita State a little bit more of a chance, but I think just with that additional that it'll be which
The Gipper factor. Got to
yeah
win.
exactly. And then I'm gonna say though that Michigan do it. Trey Burke is going to go into the annals of history in Ann Arbor along with Ramil Robinson and Glenn Rice and they're gonna win the title. So I got Michigan beating Louisville in the final. You at Louisville?
Okay, for the sake of argument, yeah, I'll go with Louisville. Although I got a
Sake of
nice
argument, you don't have to.
I got a nice feeling about Michigan. Oh, okay, if I don't have to, then I'll go Michigan. I thought we were gonna do the Siskel and Ebert thing. Okay, I'm siding with Michigan. I'll be boring. I'm taking the same thing as you.
Okay. There is no game on Monday the 8th, so they give it to the NCAA, but there are looks like
A zillion games on the net.
seven games on Saturday, but they're all, yeah. So 7 and 9 p.m. So but I mean, yeah. One day is enough for NCAA.
Well, yeah, the NBA, they should consider themselves lucky the NBA gives them that. You know, they play games on Super Bowl Sunday in the NBA, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They give no quarter, but that's that's the reign of Mr. Stern for you.
Sticking with college basketball, I don't want to touch too much on the women's Final Four that has been set. The one thing that I think was a surprise was that Baylor went down. The obviously with Brittany Griner, the immovable force down low with Baylor. They lost. And now there was a story out there today that Mark Cuban would entertain the option of let's say wasting, if you want to call it that, a second round pick on maybe Brittany Griner. You never wait, and
Let's
it
not
and
say
it.
wasting. Let's say serious speculating. I
Yeah,
mean, this is.
you never know unless you give somebody a chance, and and it's not like the likelihood of any late 50s draft pick has a good chance of making it. I'm sure the guys at in San Antonio would care to disagree with that.
I was just going to say. I mean, what is Mr. Cuban's problem with drafting somebody from South America or Europe and just letting him develop 2-3 years? Has not San Antonio proven that this works?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? I mean, here's a billionaire essentially wagering quite a fair amount of money on a penny stock. I mean, okay, I believe, sure, give her a tryout at camp, absolutely, but is somebody else really going to draft her? Must you spend a draft pick on this? And especially since the Mavericks seem to be now out of the playoffs, they're going to be drafting like middle of the order in the second round. That's nothing to scoff at. You know, they could turn this into a valuable player. If that's his statement, you're not going to draft somebody at this round who's going to make it. I mean, that's just very short-sighted, and I don't know what his sample is. I don't know what his argument is for the number 42 or 43 not making it. And you know, this is second round, so you're not going to have to pay an outrageous amount of money for this.
The second round are no guarantee.
Right. So, you know, the investment is small. Now, that might be the argument for drafting a Griner, but I would suggest that there are probably still players available, again, on other continents at this pick, at this number.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough history of guys being, you know, drafted and stored in the second round, being shipped over to Europe, you know, back to Europe or staying in Europe, that you would think that there's somebody out there that would probably serve them a little bit better.
They could just go through some Taking the Charge podcast and hear some guys that they could use at number 40, 42. You know, we've talked to some workhorses that would at least, you know, train hard and play hard.
How's this one for you? Number 56, second round, so 56 in the 2002 draft, Luis Scola.
Oh, that was a pretty good pick.
How about Mo Williams, 47 a year later? Kyle Korver a year later? You know, I mean, we're not only talking Europeans, you know, or internationals. We're also talking, you know, regular, Chris Duhon, you know, mid-second round. Ariza,
serviceable players. I mean, players that will earn their money.
You know, Spanoulis was taken in 04 at 51. Okay, never, you know. You know, people say probably he could play a lot more in the NBA if he wanted to, but...
Well, he's going to go down as one of the best players never to play in the NBA, along with Oscar Schmidt and guys like this.
And Bodiroga, too.
Yeah. Dejan Bodiroga, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there's definitely plenty of guys out there that they could probably use. And like you said, I mean, it's not a lot of money either. You know, I mean, they're not guaranteed a contract, and the salaries that those guys will earn as a second rounder is not very much. So, so what do you think? Do you think that? I mean, that would be must see preseason coverage, no?
Well, can you say reality show?
See, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there.
Well, Cuban might want to. I mean, again, what you do is you give her a tryout at camp and you make a 6-week reality TV show about it. Why not? They would at least, you know, it's like Michael Jordan playing in the minor leagues. I mean, they're going to let her play, you know, in the tryouts, in the scrimmage games, at the practices and such. They're going to give her a full scouting report and stuff. Why not just do that? You know, I when we talked about this earlier, I speculated that maybe this is one of these Phil Jackson-esque bluffs where, he's trying to induce somebody above him to throw this second round draft pick at Brittany Griner, because I mean, ultimately, I don't think she would make an NBA team.
It would be
And
interesting.
she's not going to be interested in going D League, so I again, it's just an attention grabber. It's a reality show. It's a reality show pilot. I mean, really, that's what it feels like.
2007, 48, Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
56, Ramon Sessions. 2009, Nando DeColo, Patty Mills, also that year.
Are these all Spurs picks or what?
but no, it sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I
But
mean
you
that's
see, but that if you do it right, and give somebody time, yeah. So it would definitely be interesting to see, and.
Well, look for Griner this summer. She'll be working out with NBA team, I'm sure. I think they're gonna give her the tryout. If there's nothing happening with Team USA, I think they're gonna give her the tryout and, put her through the paces and such.
Do you want to do what you mentioned how the down and out Blues in Albuquerque? You want to talk about Alfred leaving? So what did we say it was like 2 years ago that he signed the 10-year contract? Till 2020?
Who cares? Yeah, he was in there until, we were talking about that going into the season, that he had that contract. I believe he had signed it the previous year, but who cares? I mean, this is college coaching. These things don't matter. These press conferences where either the coach gets the vote of confidence or gives the "I'm going to be here for the rest of my life" speech. That's almost like a warning that it's not so. But I mean, you're looking at a guy who is the winningest coach of all time, by winning percentage at University of New Mexico. I think the importance of Alfred is he took them to that last level of college. Well, maybe not the last level. I mean, they're not a Duke, they're not a North Carolina, they're not a powerhouse like Michigan or Louisville. But he took them to that next level, and that next level is, I mean, University of New Mexico could be an NCAA tournament team now for, well, could have been a tournament team for the next, you name it, 10, 12 years, whatever. A basketball program with a proven success rate and some really nice recruiting these last 2, 3 years. I mean, this team is completely Alfred's creation under his program, and the new sports program director at University of New Mexico, who, of course, has big emphasis on improving the before shameful graduation rate of athletics programs, especially basketball. This, however, is a reset button, I think. With these second level, first level programs like University of New Mexico, they're going to have to cycle in the new recruits from the new coach with the new vision and the new game plan, et cetera, while the old guys, either adapt or die. And it seems like all but the NBA level guys tend to die on the bench in their junior and senior years. So, in the immediate short term, it's a bummer. And of course, the names are being thrown around, but I think that this is a case of the local media kind of overhyping the position a little bit. I think that a forward-thinking progressive coach would love to take the reins here. I mean, like I say, this is a vital program that's just reached the perpetual threat level. And, they're playing in a quality conference. They're playing in the Mountain West, which, a lot of the experts are saying is the second or third best conference in basketball this year. So a nice young forward-thinking coach would be great, but We'll see if it happens.
You know, I really like the move for Alford. I mean, it's another step up. I mean, I loved watching Alford, you know, play when he was with Indiana, and mm-hmm. You know, followed him, you know, while he was at Idaho, so yeah, it's a really nice step up. I think that you know, UCLA is a good enough draw already now that you know. I doubt that Shabazz Muhammad is going to come back. I think that he will probably go. I mean, I don't know how the relationship is with would be with Alford. But I see now that they're talking about Aaron Gordon coming there. Maybe you know, he's you know, way up there on recruiting boards, an elite guy. So I think it's great for him, another step up, and you know, and he's going to have the lure of LA and Pac-10 and all the storied history of UCLA to bring guys in, and you know, I you know, it's easy to see what, you know, that the guy can coach, that the guy can recruit players, and it'll be interesting to see now you know, what happens there, because I know they had had some. There was a lot of reported problems there with Howden, Ben Howland. You know, he reached all those Final Fours, but then, you know, talking. You know, there were reports. There was a long Sports Illustrated report about how you know, how the players were, you know, didn't get along with the coach at all, and it was really just sounded like a real mess there. And and then some of the players actually left. I think Gordon, the one who went, who's at mm-hmm. Partizan this year, who went to New Mexico. What's his name? The kid from with Partizan. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Gordon.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
He was there. So yeah, I think a great move. Looking forward to seeing it now because of that. You know, I think I'll probably be a little bit of a UCLA guy. You know, I do like. You're probably wondering why I didn't root for New Mexico. To be honest, I didn't realize that he had gone there. You know, I liked him when he was at Iowa, and I honestly didn't realize he was there. And then when I saw that he was there, I'm like, wow. Okay, that, you know, makes sense that he made that program that much better. So,
you were just on the Florida Gulf Coast University bandwagon.
no, never was that.
Well, Ball in Europe was, I can say proudly.
Oh, it was a great story. I mean, you gotta love March Madness because of that. Because those type of things can happen, you know.
And then you lose your coach.
And now I think now's going to be an important time for New Mexico. Now you've reached a certain level, and now there's expectations, rightfully so. And now you got to find a pretty strong coach.
I guess now the next step would be to become a perpetual top 16 threat, and New Mexico has never survived two games in this tournament. And so I guess that would be the next step. We've gotten through that NIT phase, and you know, now we can win a tough conference. And but we just can't seem to advance in the tournament year after year. So I guess that would be the next step. I guess that's the coach we need. Who can get us to the Sweet 16?
Well, for your sake,
in 3-4 years.
For your sake, I hope it's the next coach.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like being able to hear about the Lobos.
Yes, go Lobos. Go Lobos. Absolutely.
There any Lobos left in the top 16 of the EuroLeague?
Oh no. Sadly.
let's make one more shift over to the EuroLeague. Obviously, last game day of the top 16. Let's see, of the 8 quarterfinals, there are three spots still up for grabs. Home court advantage is still up for grabs. Basically, all the seeding in the Group E, where we have Moscow on top at 10-3, and then 9-4 are Real Madrid, Panathinaikos, and Anadolu Efes. And
we should say at this point, the listeners will be very happy to know that they did not hear earlier this morning, because we would have, this podcast, which is already and surely long enough, would have been about half an hour, 45 minutes longer, with -2, -10, +0, as Dave and I tried to figure out the tiebreakers, particularly in Group F. Group E, we decided to hang our heads in despair and not figure out. The top four will be CSKA, Real Madrid, Panathinaikos, Anadolu. However, since these teams are playing one another this week in some combination, what is it, CSKA, Panathinaikos, CSKA yep. in Greece yep. at Panathinaikos, and Madrid versus FS. So those will be the top four, but we're not going to figure that out.
There could be very well a three-way tie at 10-4. And then we go into tiebreaks and all that, but we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. If Moscow loses, you're guaranteed a three-way tiebreaker at 10-4. If Moscow loses to Panathinaikos. However, having seen the CSKA Madrid game last week, I must say that Moscow is really the best team out of this group, aren't they? And Real Madrid is kind of in trouble, aren't they? I mean, here is CSKA and Sonny Reims and my boy couldn't hit a three-point shot to save their lives. I think they were 2 of 9 combined for the game. And still, Moscow was able to penetrate the lane the entire game. They just ran at them with big bodies the entire match. And Real Madrid, you know, could not run them off the floor as they did in the first meeting. They could not turn this game up and turn up the pace of this game and win. Moscow really looks good, and it'll be kind of a shame if, due to some tiebreakers, they end up going in third out of this Group E. On the other hand, it really doesn't matter who they draw out of the mess in Group F. I think they're going to advance past the Elite Eight.
Quarterfinal playoffs. You asked me last week about Real Madrid. You watched them then. So I unfortunately didn't have a chance to watch that game. What would you say is wrong with Real Madrid?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this. It's live by the jump shot, die by the jump shot, and you know, if you don't hit them, you're not going to win the game. Now, lately they've just. I mean, I know that they lost in ACB a couple of weeks ago, and I forget who they played because I watched the game, so it's very shameful. But for example, in that game. And of course, in Liga Endesa, the pick and roll is everything. They just could not defend it. They just couldn't play against it. And if you're going to be a team that goes cold, that's a jump shooting team and goes cold, you better be able to play the defense. And I don't. When a team like Moscow is hot, I don't think there's a defense in the league that can stop them. I mean, they've just got too much height. They've got too much size in there. You know, they can dominate the paint at will when they get on a roll. So Madrid's not going to stop that. But they also had no answer on the offense. If just looking at them, you can't exactly see what's happening. They're not making their rotations on defense. They're not bringing the help like they were earlier in the season. Just speaking from watching alone, I don't know the stats on that, but other than that, wow, big question mark. I mean, this was a team that was looking like the best team in Europe after the top 10 round, after 15, 16 games in Spain. And now they've just, without like significant roster losses, they've just, they're graveyard spiraling their way out of Group E contention. You know?
Waiting for something. There it is. Okay. Come on. Go down, go down, go down, go down, go down, go down.
Yeah. See, here's the good radio we promised you.
So, okay. One of the things that I said last week was that, you know, that the fact that, you know, you look at the over the weekend, Tramiel Darden played 18 minutes. Do you think that that has any impact that it's two different rotations? I mean, do you have any sort of feeling like that? You know, that.
I'd be willing to say that there's a lot of Madridistas who wish that Darden was playing in EuroLeague right now. I mean, they do seem like a better team. I mean, they've always got the guy that they can go to when Darden's on the floor. That's for sure, especially in Spain. So yeah, maybe Madrid is one piece short at this point in the season. We've talked about this on the podcast before. Coming down the stretch with these EuroLeague stages like this, it suddenly all becomes about depth. It becomes about how many players you can get out there and what kind of matchups you can create, which incidentally I believe was one of the secrets to the quite frankly awesome display by Barcelona against Siena last week. Totally did not know what was coming from Barcelona with four or five players out, including Pete McKeel, probably,
Antich,
you know, maybe
Antich was out as well.
Maybe forever, yeah. And Navarro didn't play, you know, and still they won this game pretty handily. Maybe this is the problem with Madrid. Maybe they're one player short in EuroLeague coming down the stretch here. Panathinaikos sure isn't, you know. So perhaps this is the problem for Madrid.
Yeah, Panathinaikos, man, they play pretty good defense, you know, as you pretty much have to.
They got a nice tight-knit team. They've been using basically the same, like, player rotation in terms of minutes, things like that all season. You know, this is a team that's clicking right now. This is a team that's made that slow progression, as is so often happens in Panathinaikos through the EuroLeague season. And you know, they're just getting scarier. I saw an interesting little tweet yesterday from EuroHoops, which claims that the team owner of Panathinaikos has offered a bonus to every player on the active roster of 200,000 euros if they make the final four. Now, I don't know if that's true. EuroHoops seem pretty confident about this claim. But all of a sudden, I'm penciling in Panathinaikos for the final four.
You know, they... I think they have enough. I think they.
Oh, they do.
You know, and you know, obvious, man. Can you imagine that they may play Olympiacos in the quarterfinals?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Man. Come to, we're getting there. We're getting there soon. But you know, was watching Diamantidis, and he was looking hurt. He was looking sore. He was looking slow, at times. And you know, they've. You know, they've played him, you know, more than 30 minutes in every game in the top 16 in the last 10. One, two, let's see here. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The last 8 games before the Bamberg game, in 7 of those have been more than 30 minutes, and. You know, he's going to have to be healthy for them, you know, if they really have a chance. But heck of a team, you know, got the size as well. Yeah.
It's unfortunate that they can't rest him this week. You're tempted to say, you know, just take the loss, throw it away. However, they're in danger of slipping to fourth, and then they would draw Barcelona
right.
First round, which nobody wants. It's unfortunate that the Madrid FS game is happening at the same time.
Well, I think they're all at the same time.
Yeah, because otherwise they could just wait it out. They could wait out the result,
Well,
figure out
that's
if.
why you have to have them all at the same time,
Right,
because otherwise
exactly. Well,
you can
you don't have to, but I think
well, you
it would add an interesting wrinkle.
it's usually like that all the time.
But I don't. That's unfortunate for them because, like I say, I think Moscow is pretty. They're close to unbeatable right now, at least in EuroLeague, and they have to play that. Panathinaikos has to play that game, and Demetrius may have to play that game, and so they may lose anyway. This is rather unfortunate for Panathinaikos, but who knows? I mean, depending on how the tiebreakers work, they finish third, all of a sudden they're viable Final Four.
You know what? Why don't we go to the interview first, and then we'll come back to F.
Okay.
Yeah. We talked to I was at the Bamberg Panathinaikos game, and had a chance to talk to Michael Bramos. We touched on also some Greek international team stuff, but kind of talk about the team and development, and then also touch on. On the incident at the Cup Finals. So here is the interview with Michael Bramos. So Michael Bramos, congratulations on advancing to the quarterfinals. This is probably your guys' goal, especially after all of the turnover from last season. Thoughts about getting to the Final Eight?
It's great. You know, it was our goal. You know, coming in the season, you know, with a new team, and we've improved. You know, every round, and you know, to qualify with one more game left, it's a great accomplishment.
What's been sort of the key to this team this year? You guys have had a couple players come in and out, and you also had Dimitridis go down with an injury, miss a couple games as well. And just the resiliency. Talk about this team in the season.
I think our defense is great. You know, our offense hasn't been great in the beginning of the year, but our defense got us here, and now our offense is getting a little bit better. We're all learning our roles, and you know, and now I think we're playing some of our better basketball of the year.
Obviously, Dimitridis is known for just the storied history that he has. What's it like playing for a guy like that?
Oh, it's great. He makes the game easier for the rest of the guys on the court. You know, all the little things he does. You know, I don't know if the crowd can see it, but he's a great player and a great teammate.
What do you guys want to do in the quarterfinals now?
Should advance. You know, advance. You know, next week we want to win and finish as high as possible in the group, and then we'll focus on the next round. And you know, anything can happen.
I do want to go a little bit further ahead. I'd like to ask you about the incident in the Cup Final. It's your first season in Greece, and obviously there's that history. You know, you hear about it all. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, you know, it's just it's sad, but you know, it's the way the fans are. You know, it's just they're passionate, and sometimes it happens. And you know, what can you do when you get that? You just gotta move on and worry about the game, really.
But I mean, you were attacked too. I mean,
yeah, you know, yeah, but I mean, what can you say? You know, you can't predict that, and if it happens, it happens, and you know, you gotta expect that. I don't know. You know, I don't really have much to say. You know, it's just the way Greece is.
Yeah. Do you sense that there might be a little bit of a change in that whole thing?
You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what they're doing. You know, maybe they'll not have no fans for the cup. I don't know. You know, usually when the fans get together, you know, bad things happen. But you know, hopefully for the future, you know, if they just have one side of the fans or the other for home and away games, it might be better.
I just want to touch a little bit on national team. You guys obviously were in the quarter in the additional qualifying tournament. Lost a big game to Nigeria. How tough was that down in Venezuela?
It was very tough. You know, we were obviously, you know, one of the teams that were supposed to qualify. But you know, hey, anybody can beat anyone on a given day, and you know, we didn't play great defense that day, and they scored more. You know, they scored a lot of easy baskets, and you know, it was disappointing. But now we have to, you know, we have to move on as a team and look forward to the next goal this summer.
You know, there's a lot of young guys on that team. How important was that, you know, that downer, if you will, to build up the confidence coming back?
You know, hopefully motivates everybody for the next summer. You know, to come back strong, because it was, you know, Greece basketball supposed to be up there with the best teams, and you know, it was a bad point in our team. So hopefully people come back motivated this summer.
You guys got in order Sweden, Russia, Turkey, Italy, and Finland. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a tough group. You know, obviously, first thing is just to get together, you know, this summer. Hopefully everyone's healthy, everyone can make it. And, you know, we got a new coach, so we'll have to work with him. And hopefully by the time the games come, we'll look at the teams.
You guys faced Cantu and Coach Kenny there. Didn't obviously know that he was going to be the coach, but what was your impression of him and your thoughts on the job that he's done at Cantu?
You know, he's always got competitive teams, you know, in Italy. Italy, they're always competitive in the EuroLeague. You know, last year they made the top 16, I believe, and you know, this year they were a game away. So I think he does a great job, and you know, it'll be fun to work with him.
Going into the EuroBasket, what's your guys' goal? Okay, we don't know what the system, who's going to be there, but what would you say the goal is?
To reach our potential. You know, as you said, we don't know what that is right now, but you know, once we get together, that's obviously the biggest thing, to reach your potential, whether that's, you know, a medal or, you know, who knows how far. But obviously we got to get together, work on our chemistry, work together, and like I said, just reach the potential.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, that was Dave with Michael Bramos of Panathinaikos, and he plays in that country where the fans are passionate, as he says. I guess the best way to play in Greece, as we learned from this interview, is either to be Greek or to be so laid back as to say, well, you know, if it happens, it happens, in reference to being stabbed. There you go. There's your formula. All prospective players who'd like to play in Greece, American players or European players who'd like to play in Greece, adopt this attitude.
That's just the way Greece is.
Right. Right. You gotta love that. Wow. Wow. I mean, this guy is the 2013 laid-back champion of the world. I don't know if there's a competition for that, but he's gotta compete this year. He's gotta compete.
Yeah, obviously, you know, he points out how important Demetrius is, I think to a certain level when they get to the quarterfinals, I'm not going to say there's going to be a sense of relief, but they're going, you know, they've reached now where they had to be. You know, basically, you know, everything else now is almost gravy. You know, it's like after that rebuild that they had, you know, this is really the first goal. You know, this was the sort of must do in order to just establish the program, to reestablish the program or maintain the program, the level, the status of the program. And I think when they, you know, I think unless they play against Olympiacos, which obviously will be heated, and unless they drop down to the four seed when they play Barcelona, you know, I think that they're going to be a little bit relaxed, just because they're like, okay, well, you know, we got here, you know, and we're only one little step, you know, as much turnover as we had, you know, that, you know, it wasn't clear whether or not we were going to get here. Everybody thought we could and stuff, but, you know, there was a lot of different, you know, a lot of new players, a lot of new philosophies, everything else. You know, the one, you know, there was Dimitris, and there was Tsatsaras there. Otherwise, everybody else was new, including the coach, storied coach leaves. Everybody, you know, leaves. And so I think there's going to be a certain, you know, level of relief saying, okay, well, we've got here now, and now let's just, you know, it's just gravy. Let's try to go for it, you know. So,
well, I would agree with that. You know, as Bramo said, this was the stated goal at the beginning of the season. You know, let's make that final eight. But I'd like to be a bit more pragmatic about it. For me, the best non-stabbing quote of the interview is that when he said, "Look, our defense got us here." Yeah, that's the thing. Now, as they say in basketball and certain other sports, defense wins championships. Okay, I also maintain, and you know, I've stated this on the podcast before, I also maintain that in basketball tournaments, especially in Europe or internationally, the point guard takes on this exaggerated importance in these do or die tournaments. Now, if you got Double D out there, you know, who's a defensive player of the year level player, as well as bringing, you know, the outstanding game management that he displays. I mean, he's not a major kick and slash guy or anything like that, but just the way that he controls that offense is what gets them through. Is why we see them, you know, playing just 2-3 games, whatever it takes, over 500 in these other EuroLeague levels, and then just taking over in the playoffs. This is why. This is why, you know, reliable defensive systems run by, you know, Diamantidis. This is what it's about. So pragmatically speaking, you've got to, given the history of this team and how this team resembles those other teams of the past, even though they're rebuilding and bringing in a new coach, there's a certain continuity that has stayed there. Just given that, this team's a Final Four threat. Sure. Absolutely.
You know, watching teams on TV and watching them, you know, live in person is, you know, are really two different things. You have a lot better picture of an idea of the team that they are and the quality that they have. And the bigs that they have are tremendous. You know, I mean, they really fit well with one another. And, you know, you have, you know, Justin and Lazmi, you know, who are both sort of these athletic fours who, you know, four or five who, you know, can get out and block shots. And you got this immovable force down low with Sofo. That it's, you know, there's a lot there that works, you know, and you think that, you know, we go back to that trade, you know, that, you know, just was playing with Unikaha this year,
mm-hmm.
you know, and adding that piece, you know, really helped them, you know, and so to really stabilize their defense, cause, to give, you know, give Lazmi some help there. The defense really, really works. I mean, you look at the size, and that's what I mean with the sizes. You see, you really get an idea of how athletic, how big these guys are. And that they are really totally interchangeable. So, yeah, it's a dangerous team. But like we said, you know, Diamantidis is such the leader on the team that, you know, he's got to stay healthy. You know, and he's, you know, he's getting up there, and don't want to call him old, but.
Well, what Panathinaikos has been able to do, and again, it's coming back to depth, is they've been able to spread the minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Diamantidis, who is not replaceable, let's say, on this team or any other team, okay, he's at under 31 minutes. Okay, but then you look at, you got Bramos, you got James Gist, who is no longer with them, but was earlier in the season, you got Lazmi.
Gist is with him.
Oh, just is with them? Okay, he's only got... Okay, right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of somebody else. You got Lazmi, you got Machulius, sorry. It is still early. You got Tsatsaris, you got Roko Vucic. Each of these guys is right around 20 minutes a game. I mean, they are able to throw these big men in combinations at you the whole game. And you know, the thing about Sophocles is, okay, yeah, I mean, the man is a force, but the truth is, I mean, his stamina has become non-existent these days, and the best way to use him is to find that 15, 17, 18 minutes where you can, you know, exploit him, feed it to him for a quick 6 points in the paint, and then, you know, bring them out. It's ironic looking at this team and how they've been playing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that here we are in an era where they say that the big man has been de-emphasized, where you don't even have the center on the NBA All-Star Game ballot anymore. And yet you might have the two biggest teams in the finals of the EuroLeague this year, CSKA Moscow and these guys. You might see a final with a bunch of big guys throwing their bodies around, which is, you know, antithetical, as we think, to the game as it's played nowadays. But
throw Barcelona in there too, huh? as a big team.
Maybe. I was gonna mention about the Barcelona game that they proved that it doesn't matter what you take away from this team or subtract or add to this team, they're still gonna give you a game. I mean, okay, they came out with a starting lineup of Victor Saras, Joe Ingles, Erzsem Lorbeck, who going into the game had been, you know, waking up and sort of displaying things enough so that I picked him up on both of my fantasy teams, and everybody should know where that went at this point. And and my main man from the team of the week. These guys went down 11 to nothing. Sorry, in the first period after 2 minutes, Lorbeck stayed invisible as he had been all season, and they still win by a handy margin. Just really, really scary that they can, you know, patchwork this lineup together and still create something. However, if the Final Four is all about big men, you know, wrestling one another on the floor, you have to worry a little bit about Barcelona. You do. I mean, they've got bigs, but I don't know. Is Ante enough to play with like three big Muscovites?
Yeah, I hear you. But I don't know. I mean, that seems like they would have enough against Barcelona. I mean, against Panathinaikos.
I mean, if Jawai is
imagine that Jawai against Sofal.
Yeah, I mean, if he, you know, if this is not just lightning in a bottle, this game last week. I mean, if this guy can somehow squeeze out this performance like every game. I mean, wow, what a sixth man to have. I mean, especially since you're going to yank Lorbeck after about 3.5 minutes anyway. What a nice force off the bench for them. I mean, that would be deadly, you know, in a short series. Yeah, sure. But we'll see. I mean, has Jawai ever been this dominant for a single game in his entire career on any level? I mean, he just commanded that entire game. I mean, is this lightning in a bottle? Barcelona certainly hopes not, especially if they're going to have to patchwork together lineups like this through the next round.
Okay, well, let's, you know, everybody wants to know about it. The tiebreakers. Let's move to Group F, the mess that it is. Why don't you start?
Why don't I start? Okay. As near as we can figure. All right, let's do the simple ones first. If Olympiacos wins, they're in.
Standings as of the moment.
All right. Eight and five,
Maccabi and Olympiacos. 7 and 6, the trio of Kimki, Caja Laboral, and Montepaschi Siena. Olympiacos play at Kimki? No, Olympiacos host Kimki, Caja Laboral host Siena, while Maccabi play at Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Those are the five teams. So.
Right. These are the five teams in contention. Barcelona has already clinched the number one spot and the best record in EuroLeague top 16 round, I might add. Okay, so the game of the week, the EuroLeague game of the week, of course, is the Olympiacos Kimki game. Now this one has, you know, implications all over it, and this is what really makes the tiebreakers messy, is this game. Okay, now, if Olympiacos wins, they are in. Am I correct, Dave?
Yes.
Okay, the magic number, it seems, is 8-6. You need to have an 8-6 record. After this week, is it of necessity, three teams will have 8-6 records. Okay? At least three.
Yes.
okay, so if Olympiacos wins, they're 9-5, they're in. Okay. Kimki is reduced to 7-7, they are not in. 7-7 will get you eliminated from the playoffs. This also means that the loser of the Baskonia Siena game is eliminated from the playoffs. Losing, they're out. Okay. Maccabi can only be eliminated. How, Dave?
Okay. All right. So there's actually two four-way ties possible. There's the top three, Maccabi, Olympiacos, Kimki, and then either Caja Laboral or Siena. Maccabi would be eliminated if they lose to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Kimki beat Olympiacos, and Caja Laboral beat Siena. Almost. There's actually a chance that if that constellation happens, that Olympiacos, if Olympiacos were to lose by 13, then Olympiacos would be out and Maccabi would be in.
At home.
yeah. Olympiacos losing by 13 at home against Khimki. Okay. Khimki. So Maccabi are pretty much in. No, wait. No, actually, no. They're not. There's actually, if Khimki win and Caja Liberal win, then Maccabi is out. So
Maccabi needs Olympiacos to win.
Maccabi need Olympiacos to win, or Siena.
Right.
Either or.
Right.
Either or.
Or for them to win themselves.
Or they beat Barcelona. So again, Maccabi, if they lose and Khimki and Caja Liberal win, Maccabi's out. Unless Olympiacos lose by 13 points. Khimki, win or you're out.
This is the easiest scenario, actually. The easiest scenario, so nobody would have to think about the tiebreakers, is if Maccabi wins, Olympiacos wins, and that's it. Because then it's those two and the winner of the Baskonia-Siena game. That would be the easiest possible.
Right. If Maccabi and Olympiacos win, then the winner of the Siena Caja Liberal game goes through as well. The four-way tie. Okay, so and then if in the case of the four-way tie with Caja Liberal being the fourth team, Maccabi would be out. And the order would be Khimki second seed, third seed would be Olympiacos, fourth seed would be Caja Liberal, with a difference of the games among those three teams. So there's six results of minus 11. Maccabi is at minus 12, and those two teams both are set. There will be no more results being added to those. There is the result of the Olympiacos and Khimki, which is why Olympiacos could theoretically be out with a very, very big loss. The other scenario with Siena has, again, Maccabi losing, Khimki beating Olympiacos, and Siena beating Caja Liberal. That would then have Khimki as the second seed again, followed by Maccabi, Olympiacos, and Siena. Siena's chance in the four-way tie, they would have to beat Caja Liberal. Olympiacos would have to lose by 23 points at home against Khimki. In order for Siena in the four-way tie to go through. Again, like we said, if Olympiacos and Maccabi win, then the winner of that Caja Liberal Siena game gets through.
And we could easily see in the next round either two Russian teams or two Greek teams face off, and we could see Madrid-Barcelona.
Can we see?
There's no way we can see
all three.
There's no way Olympiacos and Khimki can both make it. Is there?
Olympiacos and Khimki.
Can they both make it?
Yeah, they make it in both of those scenarios. Unless Olympiacos, the only way Olympiacos would be out is if they lose big.
Lose big. Okay. Yeah. So you could have three national matchups.
Wow.
And the other one would be FS Maccabi. You put Olympiacos at 2, Panathinaikos at 3, Madrid at 4, Barcelona at 1, FS at 2, Maccabi at 3 and Moscow at 1 and Khimki at 4.
None of those matter. You know, you could where just they have to match up. They just have to match up opposite.
Yeah. After this week. You know. After this week. That could happen. And now that would be wild.
So Real Madrid, if Real finished 4th and then Panathinaikos and Olympiacos are opposite. No, that can't happen.
Okay, Khimki cannot finish 4th.
No, they can't. Nope.
But CSKA could finish 2nd. So in any case,
yeah,
this could happen.
CSKA would have to finish 3rd because in both of those four-way scenarios, Khimki would be 2nd. So they'd have to actually drop down to 3rd. But it's still possible.
With a loss, it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's safe to say we'll get at least one.
I would imagine. I mean, that would be pretty hard not to get at least one of those.
Especially with the way Madrid is playing lately. I would not at all be surprised to see them finish 4th.
But they would still have to drop. I mean, if Madrid lose and Panathinaikos lose, I don't know what the result was of those two games. I have to look it up. But so, yeah, everything is still up for grabs.
Kind of.
Well, definitely in group F.
We probably know 7 of the teams.
It's really just
about that 4th spot in group F, I think.
Well, no, Khimki lose, they're out. Yeah. Which is totally feasible in Olympiacos, and Olympiacos know that if, you know, they want to, you know, I'm sure, you know, they would be like in heaven to face a struggling Real Madrid, no?
Oh, sure.
So, you know.
Oh, sure. Madrid is the draw, I think, that nobody in Group F would mind right now.
The way they're playing, so. Yeah. So that's the tiebreak.
Yeah. Do with it what you will.
Yeah. Khimki, winner, you're out. Maccabi, hope for Olympiacos to win. Because if Olympiacos win, Maccabi's through. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Because the other team would be the Caja Laboral, the Caja Laboral Siena, and Khimki would be out.
Right.
So, all right. Fantastic stuff.
All these games are being played at the same time. All the relevant games are being played at the same time. So have fun choosing.
8:45 Central European Time. I know where I'm going to be on Thursday.
By the one day that the one week
you're. Hey, you know what? That's something. You know, seriously, I think that. I think, you know, you. This is the time to buy the one day pass, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have EuroLeague TV. Which, you know, I mean, you really should have it. It's great. Buy it for this week because you're gonna have a lot of great games that mean everything. And so go check it out. And then, you know, I'm really can't wait to watch that Besiktas Fenerbahce game. I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a real cliffhanging nail biter.
Barn burner, baby.
Barn burner, yeah.
And then, so this is the last chance for Broza Baskets Bomber to finally get their first victory at Kaunas. Mm-hmm. Oz is like, oh, shut up, Dave.
Keep that optimism alive. Next week, we'll have the moratorium on German basketball in the EuroLeague Top 16.
Yes, exactly. All right, take a break, listen to some music, and we'll catch you on the other side. You got anything else on that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay. All right, so have fun with this.
I just wanna be your disco bitch. bitch.
Welcome back to the Taking the Charge podcast. Today on Sounds of the Teens, we just heard from Gorowski with Mondo's Disco, the Studio Hain remix. Later in the show, you'll be hearing, and yes, these are all the correct names and titles, you'll be hearing Sardinia Springtime Tweak by Dr. Dub Remixes Aragala from the album Recto versus Volume 2. That's Recto versus Volume 2. For more crazy sounds like this, please check out freemusicarchive.org, where Taking the Charge gets all its best music. And now, back to the podcast with more chatter of basketball and other sports stuff.
Thank you, Wolfman Oz.
Yes. Anytime.
You know what we should have had was some, it's kind of hard to get the rights to that, but so we had some LL Cool J.
LL Cool J. Why should we have some LL Cool J Day?
Well, you know, actually I didn't realize that, 2005, man. So that was actually 8 years ago, that film.
Pretty cool. 2002.
No, but it was, the year is 2005 in the film.
Oh, is it set in 2000? Oh, God. Yeah. You mean 15 minutes into the future? They couldn't have even put it in 2018?
Yeah, 2025.
Yeah, the original was 2018. Well, see, we live in strange times because you recall growing up that if you ever saw science fiction on TV or you know, read a comic book or read a book or something like that, it was always 2000-something.
Yeah.
That was the future.
Well, we're in the future, baby.
Yeah, we're in the future, but 2170 Buck Rogers, you know, it doesn't sit as well for some reason. You know, it's not as futuristic seeming, or it's just, I don't know. But so we live in strange times, and it's very hard to express the future with a simple date in science fiction like you used to.
Yeah. So we said at the beginning, we are doing a remake of the Rollerball film that we did last week, the 2002 remake. Go for it.
Yes, so approximately just after 25 years after the original release of the original Rollerball, a science fiction sports movie based on the short story and script by William Harrison of science fiction novel writing fame, comes the 2002 remake starring Chris Klein, yes, that's right, who, LL Cool J, and Jean the Professional Renault. Let's say first off, at best, this can probably be described as a good bad movie. Going into this podcast was the third time I've watched it, and I found that applying this mindset going in kind of helps. It's also the reason for another Oz Davis rule of filmmaking, or maybe rule of film criticism, which is never start a movie with the luge. I'm sure that this is a very exciting support for the actual contestants in it, but to most of us, it looks like a guy on a board holding on for dear life. As for the movie itself, let's talk about what has changed. The setting is no longer one of these retro future 21st century future settings, let's say, but rather sort of this Eurasian region of the future, which involves essentially Russia and the countries south of that. Supposedly it said, and as Dave said, 2005 more or less, but this certainly seems like a future in which there's a lot more money and decadence than there probably is in countries like Mongolia and Kazakhstan nowadays. In the piece, the antagonistic team owner slash league official figure, so eerily played by John Houseman in the original, has been replaced by Jean Reno. And I gotta say that Reno really squeezes everything he can out of this sort of Vladimir Romanov-esque character. He's sort of a combination for European basketball fans of a Prokhorov and a Romanov, you know, done up in that Hollywood style in which, you know, in Hollywood, basically, if you can't, in Hollywood filmmaking, if you can't go with Nazis or aliens as the bad guys, Russians are good bad guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's a Frenchman playing a very good Russian bad guy. Finally, Jonathan, our hero, has become possibly the most fascinating three-sport star of all time. This guy's a real Bo Jackson of the extreme games future. His resume includes a rodeo championship as well as a status as an NHL draft pick before he goes into rollerball, and apparently inside of about 4 months takes the entire sport by storm and becomes, you know, the marquee player there. So this guy's like Hall of Fame level on three different sports here, and three very disparate sports. I mean, what part of the U.S. in this 2005 can you become a rodeo champion and play hockey?
Exactly.
I mean, this guy is seriously living in the upper class of Dallas or something like this. The sport itself looks pretty much the same as the original film, including motorcycles. And I always wonder about films like this, where you have motorcycles competing inside. I mean, doesn't everybody like die of carbon monoxide poisoning? Or are these...
The ventilation is good, man. Come on.
It's the future. I mean, this is like the Boston Garden in the 60s when you could smoke inside, right? Times about 10. I like how the actual track in the movie has gone from the traditional oval shape to like a Mobius strip. So it's like an infinity symbol, which actually looks really cool. And in fact, the game itself in this movie looks really cool. I love how some of the players use nicknames rather than their real names. So there's nothing as good as He Hate Me in this league, but guys like Michael the Assassin, you know, play in the sport. So I did like that. I should say, for fans of this sort of thing, this movie certainly does contain a lot more nudity. You get the locker room scenes that are akin to the famous Starship Troopers scenes that everybody talks about so much. Unfortunately, the movie is a lot more grim than the original, interestingly enough. With the original being set in a much more clearly dystopic world. The film also, unfortunately, contains the world's longest, most boring chase scene, I think, ever, featuring LL Cool J, mostly on a motorcycle and done up in that night vision that we see on CNN so often. You get like 10, 15 minutes of a motorcycle chase in green and black. Yeah. Really awful. Really awful. There are a whole lot of plot machinations that make no sense, including this bizarre 10-minute performance by the American sportscaster. It's really a career turn for this actor, but wow, is this irrelevant to the movie itself? This is what we call, in technical terms, padding to the script. And then there's the ending. Okay, now I'm not gonna do any spoilers or anything, but let me say this. Of all the negatives about remakes, and not so much like American film to American film, but especially American film of European films and Asian films, One of the biggest negatives about remakes is changing the ending. Okay? The bit that everybody remembers about the original Rollerball is this operatic like finish, you know, that visually ends up being about what an individual means in a team sport and the importance of one man in history and all this. And they replace it in this movie with this utterly violent, almost random act that really makes no sense and kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's just the capper on a film that's just way too serious, and it takes itself far too seriously, I should say. And you know, just kills the exciting bits with just insane drama and really over-the-top violence, which is strange to say, because we've seen films like The Juggers, which is loaded with violence, okay? We've seen the original Rollerball, which is especially violent for, you know, the 70s, you know, 40 years ago, 35 years ago. But yet in this film, it's you see the difference between violence in movies and gratuitous violence. And that's what this ending is, and that's what there is too much of in this film against a really great-looking film and a classic performance by Jean Reno.
Totally agree. Reno was great. Reno was absolutely fantastic. The action was, I think the action was good as well. The game, the changes in the game, I totally agree with that stupid motorcycle chase scene.
Oh my god!
And where where he goes off and takes out the two guys at the end. Yeah, I mean, you remember what's Khan? What's his name? From the first one, from 75, the film.
Oh, James Caan.
James Caan. You know, he puts the ball in and then you know, it just, you know, the close up on his face, and that was the end of it, you know.
Yeah.
And then all this other stuff, you know, where he goes stumbling down the stairs, and it was a messy ending. But you know what, maybe they thought, well, you know what, we have to give some resolve to this, you know, that they didn't want to, you know, leave it open, you know, that he said, okay, the bad guy has to be killed, you know, that, and this is the way we do it.
Well, come on now. You're telling me that a Hollywood film doesn't want to leave an open ending? I mean, yeah, you want to kill the bad guy, right? But then why does the Indian henchman get it?
I don't get that either.
There was your compelling Rollerball 2 enemy. Right?
Yeah, for example.
So much in this film doesn't make sense. And it's funny because the first time they, like, you get one of these completely random plot machinations where our hero sleeps with the girl, and then all of a sudden he's going to destroy the league. Yeah. And in turn, that makes no sense. The immediate reaction to this is they go on this chase scene, and that's when they lose control of the movie. Up until that point, everything is fine. Even the DJ is great. He gets one of the best lines in the movie where he's doing the introduction of the show, and then he's handed a piece of paper, and then he says, "The rules are Russian and they're complicated."
Exactly. So,
and he just bypasses them because showing the thing can speak for itself. I mean, it's a pretty easy game to understand on some level, like the Juggers game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a pretty easy game to understand if you present it correctly. And for a long time, they were doing a great job.
Yeah, I agree, totally agree.
And then the movie started being about something else, which I'm not sure what it was, except it involved getting to the border of some fictional country. really, a good bad movie, and don't feel too bad if you start Facebook and emailing during the last 20-30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't make the end of the film, you know what? Hopefully you didn't have to spend. Hopefully, you didn't have to spend too much money to rent it.
Right. Get to the final match, and then switch to the 1975 version and watch that final match.
Yeah, there you go. And the 75 is on YouTube, so it's on. It's linked on last week's show too. So, Rollerball from 2002. Yeah, it's all right.
It's a good one
for about 70 minutes, 75.
It's a good bad movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a wrap. Well, we know what you're going to be doing Thursday, 8:45.
CET.
Anything else going on this week? And then Saturday, maybe watching the semis of the NCAA.
Yeah, or ACB or something or other. I've been wanting to do. Unfortunately, personal life tends to get in the way, but I've been wanting to do the 3-day weekend of just wall to wall basketball, and then recording it as my brain goes to mush gradually. But the weekends are the hardest because there's always like Spanish basketball and other good stuff at night in the domestic leagues. So actually, nowadays it's a bit lighter. With VDB is on a break right now, and Euro Cup, I think we still have a couple of weeks until their Final Four round, I believe, begins.
They are in the Final Four, yeah.
Yes, no longer with Budivelnik in it. So could be anything, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of basketball to watch this weekend, and I will be doing it.
I'll be watching some baseball as well.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, well, then enjoy, everybody. Enjoy some absolutely riveting action starting Thursday. Unbelievable stuff going on in EuroLeague. You have the NCAA Final Four. So next week we will touch on all that. Not sure who's going to be on the show next week, but I think it might be a good wrap-up time for the EuroLeague Top 16. Have to check the schedule on that. But maybe we can do something in that regard. Otherwise, just go out there and enjoy the basketball, and we'll catch you next week. Esse é o seu